Hello and welcome to an InsideCollegeHockey.com podcast recorded February 20th, 2008. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, joined tonight on the Inch podcast by Jeff Howe, Mike Eidelbus, and Jess Myers. Once again, a lot to talk about in college hockey, and we will do that. Thanks for listening. Guys, let's start with something going on out west, and it's North Dakota. Once again, involved in some off-ice news because suspensions were handed down following an on-ice altercation between North Dakota and Denver this past weekend. Jess, what's going on with the Sioux? This isn't the first time we've seen it this year.
This isn't the first time we've seen it this week, I don't think. They've been active, let's just say, in the suspension role. I'm pretty sure this is the third consecutive series which they have had a player get a game disqualification for fighting. This past week, it happened to be, who was it, Kyle Radke. Prior to that, there was the fight at Minnesota. There was the handshake duff in Minnesota. There was Dave Hakstol making a hand gesture that got him suspended for a couple games. Prior to that, Rylan Kipe and Trevor Brewis down at Minnesota State had a pretty good dust-up. In fact, I think we posted video of it last week in the notebook. We had a thing earlier this year where Joe Finley got in trouble for whacking the Bucky Badger mascot at a game in Madison. We've had some off-ice shenanigans as well. So as far as the image of the Fighting Sioux goes, it's not the best of times, let's say.
But they're playing their best hockey right now. Is it
Absolutely.
Something they need to do? Are they kind of a team that needs to go out and play with that edge, even if it costs them manpower or penalty minutes?
Well, you know, that's the irony. And you talk to people about the sheer number of penalties they're taking. North Dakota is leading the nation in average penalty minutes per game with, like, 22.2 minutes per game. Now, granted, a lot of those are, 10-minute misconducts and stuff that don't necessarily reflect power play penalty kill stuff. But, talking to some folks that I know from North Dakota today, they're saying, hey, if you can kill the penalties and still play that style, why not do it? Because, you're making a statement on the ice and you're intimidating teams coming into your building. So, maybe there's a method to this. I don't necessarily think so. I know Dave Hakstol pretty well. I know his assistant coach, Kerry Eads, very well. And I don't think this is a conscious thing on their part.
Well, I don't think it's a conscious thing, and I don't think it's a very smart thing, to be honest. I mean, I think it's a case of living on the edge, and eventually, if you're going to take that many penalties, especially as you get into tournament time, those things are going to cost you. And I'm not sure how. We got into this big discussion about fighting in college hockey in the last podcast after the RIT Canisius line brawl, and the couple things that we talked about at that point in time were, the things that really that we found disturbing were the sucker punch in the back of the head by the RIT kid, and then the Canisius kid leaving the penalty box to come back in the fight, and the images of Kyle Radke grabbing the Denver player Vosburgh and basically pulling Vosburgh's on his back on the ice, and basically Radke's pulling him by the collar of his sweater, pulling him off the ice and punching him repeatedly to a guy who was basically defenseless. The fighting aspect of it, I know it's not common in college hockey, and I don't think any of us want to see it become a regular thing. But that said, if you're going to have fights, I think that there has to be a level of respect, and what Radke was doing was completely disrespectful to kind of the unwritten rules of hockey, completely disrespectful for the safety of another player. And I think, honestly, I think he got off clean by just getting two game suspension, one for the fight and one for the additional one handed down by the WCHA. I mean, that to me, it was I saw that move as a real punk move, and there's no place for that kind of stuff. And North Dakota fans are probably not going to agree with that, and that's their right. But I think it's a real chicken crap thing that he did, I would have suspended him for a lot longer than one game.
Well, here's something else that I've seen in all of the incidents in college hockey this year, and it's probably a little unfortunate that there have been so many to judge and compare against one another. Part of that fighting code, you know, the first, you know, in the RIT situation, attacking players who were not interested, which both sides were guilty of, both players, and they received significant suspensions for it. And then in the North Dakota case, when a guy's fallen to the ice, you know, it's a code thing, and seeing professional hockey and being around it at different levels, you know, people tend to kind of get it, you know, when it stops and when it starts and how it starts. But the other major players in managing those altercations are the assistant referees, who know when to get in and who know how to get in, you know, safely and effectively and break up fights. A lot of these videos that I've seen online of the college hockey incidents, the linesmen and the referees had no idea what they were doing in there. I mean, in one of the cases with the Minnesota,
Minnesota, North Dakota?
Sure. Yeah, but it might have been, was there another Minnesota situation in the 06-07 year, Jess?
Jeez, I...
You know, you get to watch on YouTube,
nothing,
and it's nothing related
nothing
videos.
Nothing to mind.
Oh, it was Geyer was involved.
Okay.
Jeez, but
I'm blanking.
Two guys were tied up, you know, and they were kind of locked up, and they were on the ground. One guy was in the ground, and one guy was, you know, kind of had an advantageous position in the strap, and the linesman's standing there 3 or 4 feet away, watching this all go down, waiting for him to just stop. And then, instead of the linesman going in and breaking these guys up, a third player went in, you know, and not to get in the fight, but try to pull the guy off. Well, even if he's trying to do that and be a peacemaker or just get some separation, how do the other guys in the team react? Oh, their guy went, now I'm going. You know, whereas if the guy's wearing black and white stripes and breaks it up, then it's a totally different situation. So, you know, that was just one example of the guys not knowing how to get in there and how to get things, you know, more under control.
Talking to folks from the WCHA, I mean, I've talked to people on the official side, and now I talked to Bruce McLeod today. We had a lengthy conversation about this topic and a few other topics. One of the things that's been brought up a couple times is exactly to your point, Joe. If you look at the video of the Ryland Kipe-Trevor Brewis fight down in Mankato, you know, this was, for all intents and purposes, an NHL-level fight where, you know, two guys jawed each other on the face-off, they decide they're going to go.
Gloves off, helmets off,
you know,
yeah.
They square off, you know, calmly take the helmet off, calmly take the gloves off. With all of that going on, there was a window there of maybe 3-4 seconds where, you know, you've got two ARs on the ice watching this happen. You know, Bruce McCaw's point is you got to jump in right there. You cannot let these guys tie up. If you see a fight coming, your job is to stop it before it happens. And the officials didn't do that, and that's something I know that they've been talked to about at great length in the last month. So I don't know that we'll see a fight
like
that.
Well, they haven't been doing a lot of listening of it.
No. I don't know that we'll see a fight like that one in the WCHA, at least not this year again.
Well, I think it's been a bad year for fights. It's also been a bad year for officials. Especially in the WCHA, but, you know, I think all around, I think the, just in my observations, and obviously this is nothing scientific at all, I think the level of officiating has steadily gotten worse, you know, over the past, you know, since Inch has been in existence, which is, we're now in year six, or sixth year, and sixth season, and you know, I think the, you know, the quality of officials has really taken a downturn, and I can't speak for for what happens, you know, on a night in, night out basis, obviously. But I just think that I think the officials, and part of it too, is they're being asked to do an awful lot. And I'm not sure what the answer is. I'm just saying that it doesn't seem like the quality of official is quite what it was, or that person carrying an authority or commanding respect. And maybe some of that has to do with the kids. The kids just don't respect the officials anymore. I don't know, but that's just an observation.
Well, how good would you be at your job if they asked you to change it completely every single year?
That's a good question.
I mean, with all the emphasis and the rules changes and all these dings, and, you know, some nights we're going to have two refs and two ARs. Some nights we're going to have one ref and two ARs. Some nights we'll have two and one, you know, in some different levels of hockey. You know, I don't know. That's got to be tough. I mean, I'm going to give that to the refs, that if you're told so many things from so many different people, how do you keep everyone happy? You know, the commissioner wants things one way, the coaches want things another way, and the players want things another way, and you got to get on the same page with another guy who's driving in or flying in from some other town who you may or may not have worked a game before. So
yeah, they are put in a bad spot with all the changes and the tweaks, and you know, and ultimately, who do you answer to? I guess is. Who's the authority?
Yeah. Yeah. The supervisor of officials decides whether or not you keep your job, but his input comes from coaches' evaluations, because they fill out ref evaluations after every game or after every weekend. You know. So that's not a real good situation for them to be in.
You know, the other thought that just popped into my head is maybe and I just may be off base, but are we making maybe too big of a deal out of it? Is it just that now that we're in this in this climate where we can see all this stuff, and it all ends up on YouTube, and we're sharing the links every Monday, Tuesday morning, passing this stuff around? Is it easier for all of us to see what's going on in these incidents and looking at it as an epidemic?
I would think that's a big part of it, the fact that we can see all this so much more.
I would agree with that. And there's a forum for communication. I mean, right now the four of us are talking in four different states at the same time, you know, real time on a Wednesday night, let alone where our listeners are coming from. Where are they sitting? At their computers, at their desks, in their cars. They can text message a buddy, say, can you believe what Rook Howell said on the podcast? Which was nothing. So far, give them time. It's early.
I'm just warming up.
All right. I mean, you know, that's part of the deal too. You know, if two guys in Anchorage are having a beer and talking about what they saw at the rink on Saturday night, you know, that doesn't necessarily make its way to Central New York or Greater Boston or Tampa or Dallas or wherever the people may be following the game.
Absolutely. We should maybe move on.
So we're just talking. I think we're talking louder, and more people can hear us, is the point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a downer to start.
Let's talk about something good in college hockey.
All right.
The floor is open. Whoever wants to talk about something good, go ahead.
Well, it's a good weekend coming up, that's for sure.
Good games.
You've got some good games. Michigan, Michigan State, UNH and Boston College, Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Yeah, every WCHA game is better than those. Remember that.
Is better than which?
Any of the other leagues.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Okay.
We had some interesting...
I'm sorry, did you say we have good games coming up and we have Minnesota and Wisconsin? That would be more appropriate.
Well, I don't think... there's a
rivalry...
There's
when they play.
There's a rivalry aspect to it. Obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. And it means something to the Badgers just because they're in a fight for home ice. So.
Well, and I think I think
It's not that it doesn't mean anything to Minnesota. There's more at stake for Wisconsin. Let's
yes.
That.
And I think
how much
I think watching the Gophers lately is you know, they're kind of a curiosity. It's like watching, it's like driving past a traffic accident. You know, you shouldn't look, but you just gotta.
can't look away.
That's my fascination with the Gophers right now. Who knows what'll happen?
Okay, we were supposed to be talking about something good in college hockey.
Well, for the
Brooks,
the other
something good in college hockey.
The other nine teams in the WCHA think that's good.
I suppose.
There you go. Just saying.
Well, we've got some good hockey up here in the Northeast this weekend. I don't know what you guys can say about UWCHA or everything else out there out west. You guys pronounce your eyes, but we got a lot of good pucks going on. It's a good little home and home this weekend. BC hosts the first night, UNH the second night, and UNH can clinch the top seed in the Hockey East playoffs with 3 points. It'll win the league crown outright if they sweep the weekend. And BC is actually, and you know, not to be forgotten in this thing, BC is in second place right now and only has, I think, a 3-point lead on the next four teams. So, you know, say UNH comes out and sweeps this series, that would obviously be the big news. But if a few other teams have some big weekends, you know, behind BC, then Boston College could find itself in fourth or fifth place, you know, in the blink of an eye. So there's only 3 weekends to go in the regular season. BC can really not afford to, you know, to come out and get swept. I don't think they will. I think they're playing well enough where they can at least start to split, and that's probably what's going to happen. But it should be a good weekend up here.
Is this a bigger weekend for New Hampshire as far as proving its legitimacy? They've been great in the league. Outside the league, not so much. Is this their latest test? And then even what they did against Providence was a 3-point weekend, but it was a couple penalties and a couple bounces away from being the other way around.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, Kevin Regan made a career-high 52 saves, I think, on Friday night during the 1-1 tie against Providence. So, you know, that could have been a split easily. But, you know, I don't think this is bigger for UNH just because UNH has won the regular season crowns. Even if they do get swept against BC this weekend, they have a 5-point lead in the conference. They still control their own destiny. So they could get swept and still win the league crown, the regular season crown. UNH has to do something in the postseason. We all know that's been their biggest demon in the school's history, the program's history. They haven't done anything in the national tournament worth really talking much about, despite the fact that they've had a number of great teams over the last 10, 15 years. So, you know, I think this is a bigger weekend for BC simply to just not slide down and to maintain where it's at. UNH is playing great hockey right now, so unless they come out and get whitewashed, I think as long as they get a split, as long as they win in Durham this weekend, then, you know, everything will be fine up there.
Good deal.
I have to ask. State. I have to ask one question. Sorry. There's a Boston University team that seems to be creeping up on in the hockey standings. You know, what's changed for them over? You know, it's probably, I guess, been this month, really, the last 3 weeks or so that they've really started to play well, and
they've won 5 out of 6.
And I guess, you know, a lot of that is Colin Wilson, obviously. I mean, he's been lights out. What can you tell us about BU and what they've been doing?
Well, the funny thing is they're creeping up very quietly. Nobody's really paying a whole lot of attention to them because of how bad they were the first 3 months of the season. And they didn't win the bean pot, so that was another big thing. I mean, if they went out and won the bean pot, then you'd say, oh, BU's turnaround is because of the bean pot again, but they can't really hang their hat on that. They've been able to score all season. I think they've got the second highest scoring offense in Hockey East this season, but they can't keep the puck out of their own net. I think they have the worst scoring defense in the league. So the last 3-4 weekends or so, Brett Bennett's played a whole lot better in goal. I think his goals against is under 2, it might be around 1.5, and that's a huge reason why BU's been able to, you know, come out and have some success over a sustained period of time. I remember the last podcast we were talking about BU's second two-game winning streak of the season, with the first coming in November. So, I mean, that tells you about how inconsistent this team has been. And now that they've actually been able to string some wins together, they were able to hide themselves in a very mediocre Hockey East this season. So once you're able to get on any kind of a run, whether it was in November or whether it's at this point in the season, you're going to make a move up the standings because of how closely stacked all the teams are.
And they're
I'm
still
glad
got,
you asked that, Bus.
That's
a team I've noticed.
And I was looking at their schedule, and I can't remember it off the top of my head now, of course, but I know they have I think they still play Providence, if I'm not mistaken. And I believe they still have, I want to say Northeastern, maybe they still have left to play.
Yeah, they've got a home-and-home with Northeastern this weekend, and I really couldn't tell you. I think you're right about Providence, but I'm not sure about the final weekend of the season.
But, they can control, I guess they kind of control their own destiny. This is, you know, they have a chance to reel these teams that are right in front of them in over the next 3 weeks. And, I mean, they could end up at home for that first round. I don't know that they'd want to end up at home, given the way they've played there since that building's been christened. But,
You're absolutely right about that. On both points, do they want to be home? Because again, it's as unbelievable a place as that is to watch a game. Apparently, it's not that great of a place to play a game if you be you. But when you say that they control their own destiny, and they certainly do. But like I said earlier, they're one of the four teams that are directly behind BC there. Within 3 points. So you can say BU controls its own destiny, but there are seven teams in the league that pretty much control their own destiny right now.
BU's last three weekends: home and home with Northeastern, home and home with UMass, home and home with Providence. Those are three teams they can make big moves on that are sitting right ahead of them in the standings right now.
Well, UMass is right now in eighth, and they're hurting pretty bad.
Okay.
But they actually have a big weekend. They're in Orono this weekend. UMaine is, I think, 4 points behind UMass for the final playoff spot. If UMass goes up there and sweeps, then UMaine will miss the Hockey East playoffs for the second time in the history of the conference.
8-17-3 for Maine.
Last time was what, about 86, 85 maybe?
No, it was 97.
Oh, interesting.
Rook, did you save all those emails that we got back in in October saying how dumb you were for picking Maine 7th or 8th or whatever it was?
Unbelievable. I thought they'd be better than they were.
Yeah, you were giving
them pumping their tires.
Exactly. Put them in seventh. I thought I was being nice.
I was like Plaxico Burress saying the Patriots score 17 points. he overstated. All
I don't know if it's funnier that it's true or if it's funnier that you compared your intelligence to Plaxico Burress.
I was hoping to go in another direction with that, but hey.
I love Flex. I love Flex. Okay.
Maine doesn't, by the way, Maine does not miss Teddy Purcell at all.
Leading the American League in scoring, I think.
I don't think he's in the American League anymore, is he? I think he's in L.A.
Yeah, I think he was called up right after their All-Star game.
Ah, even better.
That worked out pretty well for the Kings.
I'm going
to John Quick.
Yeah, and Matt Molson.
That's right.
Okay, I discovered Matt Molson and Dustin Penner.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention this. Speaking of Dustin Penner, watching Hockey Day in Canada, it was about 2 weekends ago now?
Yeah,
I think
I saw some of this.
February 9th it was, and they were in Winkler, Manitoba. That was their hub for the day.
That was declared Hockey Day in Canada City of the Year or something.
Yeah, City of the Year. Every year they broadcast from a different city. I think last year it was, 1 year it was someplace in Alberta on the prairie, and the year before that it was up in the Maritimes. But this year was
Kitchener?
Winkler.
Have they ever been to Kitchener?
They have not been to Kitchener. No.
Parry Sound?
Okay, I'm done.
Thanks, Rand.
There are no USHL teams in Canada, Jeff. Don't worry about it.
Hey, Rand, give my best to McNally.
All right.
Anyways,
yeah,
Winkler, Manitoba, and they show a shot from the front of as you come into town, and there's the big sign, welcome to Winkler, Manitoba, home of Dustin Penner, 2007 Stanley Cup champion Anaheim Mighty Ducks.
Yeah.
Right as you drive into town, huge sign, and pretty good turn of events for somebody who thought he was going to be pumping gas in Winkler.
Yeah, yeah. Went to Maine, had himself a nice little run for the Black Bears, got discovered. They'll find you. They'll find you.
Yes, they will. Even if it's
you can play, they'll find you.
At MSU Botno.
That's right.
And then
Grant
they show
Stanbrook will find you.
Yes, and then they actually show the Winkler Flyers. Speaking of USHL, that's a Manitoba Junior Hockey League team.
Yes, it is.
In Winkler, they were playing the Selkirk Steelers.
Yeah.
And Eddie Belfour's son was in goal for the Winkler team.
Yeah, and the Winkler team retired Penner's number. The youth hockey organization in Winkler.
Winkler didn't make the Winkler team, did he? Or Penner did not make the Winkler team, did he? The junior team?
Well, he played youth hockey. I think it was like a midget or a
but
Bannon.
But the Manitoba.
The Manitoba team? I think you're correct.
I don't think he made the junior team, which is ridiculous.
Get that coach on the phone.
Yeah. I want to see his notes. Ed Belfour owns the team, or is one of the owners, I believe. He's from nearby.
Yeah.
Former North Dakota. Goaltender for 1 year.
Where were we going before the hockey day in Canada?
We were talking about Hockey East, and then
we were talking about Teddy Purcell, and we were talking about American League. And
yeah.
I want to go on a soapbox that I've been on before, but I'll make it brief. If there is an American Hockey League team near you in your market, or if you're traveling through a town where there's American Hockey League action, go to the game. It's great stuff. And the guys can play. And watching as much college hockey as I do and then going to see an American League game on a Monday night between two teams that really weren't that great, two middle-of-the-pack teams, it was great hockey. I mean, the talent level and the skill level of those guys is far superior. You know, there's the few guys. You know, of course you're going to have an Eric Johnson or a Phil Kessel or, a guy who's going to, be a star in the show. But how many of those guys are in a college game? One out of every 10 games? You know, two out of every 10 games that you'll watch? You see one of those guys? And now, I mean, you go see this American League, it's just fantastic. The fighting's great. The teams work hard to market their products on and off the ice. A lot of stuff going on. Bring the kids. Very affordable. Sit close to the ice. Get an up-close look at the game. You pay three times what you pay for an American League game to go to the NHL, and you're sitting in the upper bowl where you really can't get a feel for what's going on. That is all.
No, I would agree.
100%. American Hockey League. I'm giving the grapes thumbs up here. Nobody can see it. There you go.
No, I would agree.
Attaboy.
I've been to a few American League games, and it's good stuff.
There are four teams, actually five if you count Springfield, that are in my area. Lowell isn't really doing so hot, but, their ownership group and everything that's happened with their arena has been a joke. But Manchester up in New Hampshire, that team is run very well. They have a really diehard following.
Tons of college guys on that roster. Tons.
Yeah, tons. You're right. John Quick was there. Ryan Boyle was there. And, I mean, that place is littered with college guys.
It's six or seven ECAC guys. Gabe Gauthier is up there.
Goats.
A couple Cornell guys. Tons of guys.
Yeah. And then
they're good. They're really good.
I was going to say, they're usually one of the better teams.
Yeah. The Baby Bruins down in Providence get a big draw, and then if you want to put on your Teflon, you can go to Worcester or Springfield and pick up a game.
Hartford?
Hartford.
Hartford.
Keep your Teflon.
Hartford, you got some
Iowa.
You got New Haven down there? Or Bridgeport?
I was in Iowa last weekend. They got a team.
Go ahead. Uniforms and everything.
I'm refusing to go see the Stars, though, because they traded Junior Lestard. I'm still bitter. One Hobie, I mean, come on.
That apparently was the problem.
So he was in the Dallas organization?
He was in the Dallas organization.
He got traded.
And he could score goals? There's no way he lasted in that franchise. You mean we can get 4 third liners for this guy? Come on. Fight us off. Oh, and a pylon defenseman will chop down anybody who comes in the slot? Perfect. Now if you can only get rid of these stupid delay of game penalties, you can throw the puck over the glass.
Somewhere Trevor Daly's ears are burning.
Jeez, if I didn't know any better, I'd think you were talking about Jeremy Jacobs.
The Bruins try to score. They just
Can't. The Bruins, yeah.
Dallas just doesn't even try.
No.
Well, the Bruins have a very solid head coach in Claude Julien right now. But, you know, they love trading their stars, you know, like Joe Thornton for a bunch of third liners and, a second-line defenseman. You know, Joe can go out and win the MVP and all
of that. Trophy winner.
Yeah, that's...
Speaking of teams that don't score, and since we're on the Bruins topic, I'm at the Minnesota Wild game last night. This is the mentality of the average Minnesota sports person right now after we've seen Kevin Garnett and Randy Moss and Johan Santana and Torrey Hunter and anyone else of quality leave the state. Marian Gaborik makes this great rush to the net and score. And I said, boy, he's pretty good at hockey. And the guy sitting next to me says, yeah, he'll do great when they trade him to the Bruins.
Are they shopping him, Jess?
No. No, the trade rumor here is Olli Jokinen may be coming to town.
From the Pants?
From the Pants.
I read someplace, I might have been, I don't think it was the TSN website, it was someplace else where, oh, I know, it was Eklund. So take that,
Hockey Buzz?
Hockey Buzz, take that for what it's worth. I'll leave that disclaimer out in the front, but mentioned Minnesota as a possible landing spot for Peter Forsberg, and I don't think so.
For what?
I don't know.
A lot of that is playing on his way to Vancouver.
Yeah, maybe.
A lot of that's coming from the fact that Craig Leupold, who's buying the Wild, owned the Predators and went out and got Forsberg to play for the Predators, and there's a relationship there.
Wow.
Oh. Right.
That's A to B right there. We connect the dots for you.
Wow.
Here on the East podcast.
I don't see it happening.
No.
I don't know. I guess those what the meetings at Red ended today, the GM meetings.
Yes, 3 days.
So hopefully there will be some movement here.
Well, I talked to Joe Bertagna, I think yesterday, maybe 2 days ago. I don't know, whatever day today is. Maybe it was yesterday.
Well, it's a podcast, Brooke, so everyone's listening to it on a different day.
Yeah, so it was the other day then.
Exactly.
The other day.
And he was saying that the NHL is setting up a committee to monitor the signings of college players and everything that goes into it, the timing of it, and just a bunch of different things to make sure that process is being, it's clean, it's not under the table, and things like that.
They already have a committee. It's called Agents, who oversee the signing of college players to pro contracts. I mean, they're going to have to sit down over the summer and put some hard and fast rules in, not just like, well, we'll keep an eye on it. Any of us who are parents, which I'm not, thank God.
Not that you know.
Know that.
I have to be somewhere.
What are you, Sean Kemp? I take care of my
Tom
kids.
Tom Brady.
You know, Sean Kemp has 15 illegitimate children.
They're all legitimate. They're legitimate children.
By how many different women?
It's probably, you know, it's Sean
it's
Kemp,
15.
So it's probably 17 different.
I think he had one with Vin Baker.
That's one of the easy jokes on like Sports Illustrated every year about the BCS saying, you know, it's more confusing than Father's Day at Sean Kemp's house.
Okay.
I just lost my train of thought. No, I lost my train of thought.
Can we get back into a little college hockey? Anything else?
Well, I was going to talk about this.
I want to talk about Miami being overrated or not being overrated.
What? Okay. All
right. I think you said it right. I think in the Inch Power Rankings this week, Bus raised a very strong point. He was the author of the slug. That read, keep in mind, Michigan State was 1-4-1 to close last year's regular season. Nobody will remember these last two weekends of Miami hockey if they go to the Frozen Four. They'll remember it as the year they were number one for most of the season and went to the Frozen Four.
Yeah.
And they're good. They're real good.
You know,
every team has bad weeks, bad slumps, bad months.
Well, and I went up to Big Rapids on Saturday, and, you know, Miami had chances, and I talked to Rico Blasi after the game, and he said, like you said, every team goes through this at some point in the year. They just happen to be going through it in mid-February. Most of the other teams have gone through this already, have battled their way through their rough stretch. So it just magnifies a little bit more, and people start asking questions. Well, what's wrong with Miami? What's wrong? You know, they're overrated, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they had a lot of chances against Ferris on Saturday, and just, you know, weren't burying them or getting bad bounces. They've got injuries that they're dealing with. Carter Camper's out, freshman center, who's been terrific for them. And they're bringing, you know, Nate Davis back in after being sidelined since basically, I think, mid-November. And as good as Nate Davis is, you just don't step in and come back at 100%. Ready to go, and he has, you know, he did look good, and one of the questions, you know, it was kind of interesting. The first goal that Ferris scored, Miami's got the puck in the offensive zone. Right defenseman has it up by the blue line. He kind of fakes a shot, and the guy at the forward that was kind of in his way fell down, and the other defenseman pinched because he was going to get a great one-time shot. Well, the Miami D-man goes to kind of walk around this guy who had fallen down to make the pass, while the other D-man, his teammate's pinching, and the Miami guy with the puck falls down. So here's this puck laying at center ice. By this time, the Ferris State guy gets up. Gets the puck in neutral zone, goes all the way in, scores on a breakaway. You know, and it's, yeah, you know, there's a slump, but then there's also these times that, you know, things just don't go your way. And I asked Blasi about that, too, and I said, you know, is it, you know, are you not getting the breaks because you're not playing well, or is it because you're not playing well, it just kind of magnifies these instances when you don't get the breaks?
What did he say?
He thought it was, you know, when you don't play well, when things don't go your way, it just seems more magnified. It's not because they're not working hard. When we talk about the breaks and bounces and things like that, a lot of that is a result too of, you know, being in the right place at the right time, and a lot of being in the right place at the right time is hard work and, you know, playing smart. But he thought that you know, just when you don't get the bounces or, you know, a puck hops over a stick blade on a one-timer or a perfect setup, you know, just magnifies that. You just dwell on it, you think about it, and, you know, you get more frustrated, and it just kind of snowballs from there.
Well, and the other thing to go with that is when a team can struggle in November or December, like you were saying, every team goes through it, then there's not as much pressure to turn it around. When you've been the number one team in the country through most of the season and you start to slump or struggle or have things not go your way in February and, you know, you look up and you're only a couple weeks from your conference tournament and, you know, a month from the national tournament, then you start to grip things a little tighter and you really try to force things to turn themselves around, and sometimes that's not the best way to do it. So, you know, February, you can say teams are going to go through this at some point in the year, and they all will, obviously, but February is still, you know, not the most desirable month for things like that to happen.
I think we've even seen some of that in the NCAA tournament. How many three seeds are winning games every single year? Get the dark sweaters, they got to change first, but you know what? We're a good enough team. We've proven it all season to be in this tournament, and now we can go out and play loose.
Exactly.
Now they make it to the Frozen Four.
No pressure on them.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think and Michigan State proved it last year. And who knows how this experience will help Miami. I mean, it is a critical time of the year that they've find themselves in this situation. You know, and ultimately as a team, they're going to have to decide that either we play better or we're going to be done real early, earlier than we'd like.
It is more important for Miami than any of the other teams in the CCHA to have a very, very good conference tournament. They need to experience success. You know, you could talk about building. You could talk about taking those steps. And last year they got to the tournament and won a game. And, you know, this year they might win a league title in the regular season and all these things that go on as part of the process to get to a Final Four. But part of the process is also having success and winning big games, not just playing in them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for Miami, it's very important if they go out and win that tournament. Especially, you know, if they were to go to the finals and lose to Notre Dame or Michigan State or another team who gets hot at that time of the year, that's fine. If they go to the finals and lose to Michigan, then it's, oh, man, we'll never beat these guys. And we're just not good enough. So I think for Miami, that is going to be a very, very important part of the rest of their season.
Agreed.
Two teams.
They're still a good
at
team.
This time,
they're still a very good team.
Very good. I still pick them to go to the Frozen Four.
I think I would, too.
100% I think they're going. I think they're the best. Just not the best, but I think they're the best team equipped for that tournament.
You know, I'm sure we'll get emails left and right. And
we do.
You know, we'll get bombarded, but I think they're the most talented team. I mean, they're...
Top to bottom, 20 guys.
Yeah, top to bottom. I mean, they've got... Their depth at defense is actually, I mean, it's amazing how deep they are, how good they are in defense, and, you know, the depth at forward and, you know, the young guys that they have that, you know, you've got Carter Camper, obviously, who was lights out until he got hurt, and then they've got Justin Vive, who's Rick Vive's son. He's a freshman wing.
Nice.
Kid's just a monster. I mean, he's huge. And I, you know, he goes like 6'5", and you can tell he hasn't grown into his body yet, and he's just going to get bigger. And he's like John LeClair's size out there. He's just huge. He's a Goliath. And he's going to be one of the, you can tell that he's going to be one of those players that, I mean, he's just, you know, once he kind of grows into his body and figures out how to use his size to an advantage, he's going to be tough to stop.
Little ECAC topic for you. Two teams last year were fighting it out for the regular season title, and now both are virtually guaranteed to be on the road for the first week of playoffs. That means finishing in the bottom four of the league, and that is St. Lawrence and Dartmouth. Just goes to show that things go your way sometimes, and then the next year they don't. I mean, nobody gets blown out in that league. It happens very rarely. So if you win four close games one year and you lose those games the next year, that's a 16-point swing in the standings. And that's where the Saints and Big Green find themselves right now.
Another thing,
and
that
both of those teams has beaten New Hampshire. I'm just not. It's not a slight on New Hampshire.
No,
it's
just
how it works out.
Yeah.
So.
But another thing about the ECAC, and this kind of all folds in. This actually folds into the WCHA and the and Hockey East as well, as we sit here on whatever night this is, Wednesday night, and preparing the latest edition of the latest update to the 4x4 throughout the course of the day. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I mean I may need to bounce this off you before I make it go live later on. But right now I've got I've got Princeton making the NCAA tournament.
They are in a position to do so. I mean,
because I think they play Cornell, Colgate, at St. Lawrence, at Clarkson are their last four games.
It's a tough run right there.
Yeah, it's a tough run. But if they win, I mean, it'll help them. You know, if they win three of the four, they'll be in good shape. And just the other thing, I look at the WCHA, and it's like, you know, I know that, you know, looking at the latest rankings, the computer rankings, St. Cloud's in there, and Duluth's in there, and Mankato's in there, and Wisconsin's in there, and, you know, there's kind of a group of Northeastern and Providence and, you know, maybe Lowell on the outside, kind of either in or on the bubble. And, you know, you look at Duluth and St. Cloud, and they have the numbers and they have the credentials, but those teams are going to, you know, once they get in the playoffs, they're going to start beating up on each other. You know, I don't see a way where all four of these teams can make the NCAA tournament. All four of those WCHA teams can. You know, nor can I see a situation where, you know, Providence and Northeastern get in. One or the other, yeah. In the case of the WCHA, I can see maybe two of the four, but three of the four I think is a stretch, and all four of those teams, no way. I mean, it's just not going to happen. I can't envision a scenario where all four of those teams that are in fourth through fifth, sixth, seventh, regardless of what the numbers say right now, all make the tournament. Just not. It can't be possible.
That would be six WCHA teams in the tournament?
Yes, I believe so.
No, it won't happen.
I honestly can't. And right now,
would that be seven?
There's no way that all four of those teams or behind North Dakota, CC, and Denver can get in.
Yeah.
And I think Denver, I think, will get in. I think two of those four is more likely. And the team that I have a really hard time making a case for is Duluth.
I would agree.
It's
a team that hasn't done anything offensively all season. I mean, it hasn't been a matter of injuries. It hasn't been a matter of you know, just not finding the right line combinations yet. They've tried everything. And there's just not, you know, any more offense.
Well, and they play Colorado College. They play North Dakota. They play at Minnesota. And then they're going to play, you know, a team similar to them in stature in the first round of the WCHA playoffs. I mean, they could lose eight in a row.
They're looking at possibly going to Wisconsin for the WCHA playoffs. They've split with Wisconsin this season.
And I don't mean any disrespect to Duluth, but I just, you know.
I don't think it's disrespect, because look at the, you know, the computer rankings and what, they're still eighth in the country, which is amazing.
And yet I still feel compelled to leave them out of the tournament, because I think they're really going to have a hard time, especially the next 2 weeks against Duluth or against CC and North Dakota.
Well, something to keep in mind with those computer rankings. Those are not designed to be looked at on a week-to-week basis.
Right.
Those are designed to look at the end of the season, because all those criteria.
You look at them once, and then you look away. You get a sense of them, and then look away. It's like the sun.
Well, I mean...
Or the lunar eclipse, like we have.
That's right. You just glance at them, you get an idea, and then look away. Because you're just risking problems.
Well, you know what you said, though, Bus,
like
about...
Like Bus watching Minnesota.
But, I mean, you can look at it now, and you can... What did you say? What was that?
Like you watching the Gophers.
Oh, yeah, just for purely entertainment purposes.
Exactly. This is not a gambling website.
No.
It is for entertainment purposes only.
I'm convinced that one of these nights the Gopher bench is going to start on fire. I mean, it's been that kind of year.
All they need to do is trade for Fred McGriff and it'll happen.
Only if
yes,
he wears...
that's a 1992 Atlanta Braves reference. Thank you.
Only if he wears that Tom Emanski hat.
Kellen Briggs could use some infielding practice. Okay, going back to tie in two of the things you talked on, Bus, Princeton could also lose these next four games.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, you look at the potential of winning three out of four. Colgate's playing their best right now. They're like the Boston University of ECAC hockey that they kind of knew there was something there and hadn't seen it. Now they're kind of seem to be turning the corner a little bit. We'll see how long they can get it going. Cornell is Cornell. I mean, they're good. And they're not having a season that probably they expected, but they're all right, and they're tough. And that game's at Lina.
Yes.
Or no, I'm sorry. That game is in New Jersey. Yeah, at Baker Rink. And then they got to go up north with Cornell and St. Lawrence. And while St. Lawrence may be out of the picture, it's going to be senior day there. You know, they'll want to put on a good show because it'll definitely be their last home game. Although they don't have many seniors, just goalies. So we've got all junior captains, but that's that's why they play the games, and that's why these next couple weeks will be interesting, because you get an emerging team like a Ferris State or Boston University or Minnesota State who gets hot at the right time.
All right,
so there you go.
I don't know the Mavs scheduled on the stretch off the top of my head. I know they play Nebraska-Omaha. I know they have one game. I guess they play CC, too, now that I think about it. I think they're at Colorado College.
At Colorado College and then home with Michigan Tech for their last two.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong.
Anything else, guys? Hockey talk, or should we deteriorate a little?
I wanted to just add some good news and some bad news about our service academies. Which would you like? Good news or bad news first?
Service academies need the morale. Let's go good news first.
Good news first. Josh Castle, and he was our player of the week this week. So,
are you crazy? How can you name Josh Castle player of the week?
We got that? Seriously?
Five times.
At least from the Andrew Coast.
That one goal he's allowed in the last five games was awful.
I can give you one guess where most of the IP addresses are from.
Don't say
it on the record.
I said Andrew Kozak.
Oh.
I don't care.
Keep in mind, though, if it says at und.edu at the end, that's Notre Dame.
No.
Okay.
These were
signed like, here's my home phone number, address, hometown. Come here and talk to me like a man because you don't know anything about hockey.
Quit pouring.
And I'll cross-check you in the back.
Quit pouring sand in
or
my
Or I'll
wound.
Send Darcy Zajac over to cross-check you in the back.
Four shutouts in five games, and he knows how to use an M16. Don't mess with the guy.
And you know what? And I understand where the people who are emailing us, I understand what they're saying. What I think that, you know, what I think that they're missing the point is when you shut out an opponent twice, regardless of who the opponent is and who you're playing and the relative strength or weakness of the schedule or the team. I mean, it's still what he's done over the last, you know, whatever their unbeaten streak is. Now I think they're 9 games unbeaten.
9 games. 8-0-1.
I mean, it's still impressive. And
he took his team from 7th in the league in a 10-team league a month ago to first.
Yeah.
In a month.
And, you know, the argument will say, well, you know, North Dakota,
it's not the player of the month, it's the player of the week.
Well, North Dakota DU was a more important game. Well, it was more important to North Dakota and DU, and there was more people in the stands, but those games that Army played were just as important to those two teams as it was to North Dakota and DU. So,
in fairness to the other 19 guys who wear the Army sweater, it is not a one-man team. And in talking to Frank Ceratori at Air Force today, he said the one thing about Army that people forget is they make it incredibly hard to get to their net. I mean, they play a defensive style that, you know, you got a whole bunch of stuff to deal with before you even get a chance to shoot at Castle. So it is a group defensive effort, and it's not always great hockey to watch, but it has proven effective, and Army has put itself in a good position to win Atlantic Hockey. I mean, they're 2 points up on Sacred Heart right now. They closed the season with a home-and-home against Sacred Heart, so for all intents and purposes, that's what
mark your calendars.
Going to be the Atlantic Hockey regular season title up for grabs right there.
Circle the date.
The bad news now about our fighting men and women, and in this case, the fighting men.
I thought they were defending our freedom.
Defending our freedom? Okay, sure.
I was mistaken. I was told we were not fighting.
All right. Fair enough.
Well, I'm just saying.
I was going to rattle off a quote from A Few Good Men, but those were Marines, and they don't have hockey. Anyway.
Marines saved CHA.
Wow.
Okay, go ahead.
In talking to Frank Ceratori today, he wouldn't tell me as much. Wouldn't come out and say it, but it sounds like Eric Eanes' hockey career, at least his college hockey career, is done. He has not recovered anywhere near to the point yet where he's going to be able to play from the leg injury he had. And Ceratori pointed out it's not only a matter of a broken bone, which we knew about, but it sounds like there's some ligament damage. I mean, he couldn't tell me a lot of that on the record just because, you know, there are privacy matters, but he certainly made it sound like we're not going to see Eric Eanes in an Air Force hockey uniform. We will see him in one of those cool blue dress uniforms they wear at some point when he graduates, but sounds like one of last year's three Hobie hat trick finalists not going to be around. Too bad.
Yeah, great career. Great career.
Indeed.
Well deserved of all the recognition and accolades he earned last season.
And as a result, he will be mentioned in my hockey East notebook this week.
Yes, he will. Yes, he will.
Oh, okay.
What you call
a
teaser.
Yeah, I see where this is going. I'm just going
to
let it go.
I didn't talk to you about this, Bus.
Well, no. No.
The East Region assignment editor kind of threw a bone at Rook.
Excuse me?
To explore. Rook fetched.
Let's just say we have a very in-depth notebook this week.
Our lead notebook. Well, I'm comfortable saying this much.
I was about to do that. I know.
Before you cut me off. All right.
I got it.
Okay. Say it. You sound like my wife. You sound like my wife. All right. Nathan Gerby, on ice, never a doubt. Difference maker, super talented, high scorer, winner, clutch, all those great things that you look for in a player. Misconduct penalties, mysterious suspensions. You know, all kinds of other things that have also come across Nathan Gerby's career. And Rook Howe has a look at all sides of the argument. So that will be the lead item, expanded, blown-out lead item story in the Hockey East notebook this week. Check it out.
I've got quotes, and I didn't even use all of my sources. I've got quotes from 8 different people in this notebook.
So you're going to get a lot, all the sides of the story.
Wow. Every single side.
So if it's eight,
eight-sided.
If it's 8 people, it's an octagon.
Octagonal-sided story.
Octagonal, yes.
What we're saying
yes,
is that
indeed.
There's many dimensions.
Yeah, we're good.
But I mean, good. I think it's a great argument. And it's something that we've battled with the Hobie Tracker, or the Trackler, as we like to call it, in-house, is, I wonder what happened to that guy, by the way.
I know. Anyway. When are you going to update the Trackler? Every 2 weeks, just like it says on the top.
Anyways, you know, at what point does the, you know, there's a character, the award does take into account the character aspect of the player.
And it is definitely considered by the voters.
It is.
100%. It does make it. It's not a token thing that they put in a press release to make people feel good about the kid.
No.
It is absolutely 100% taken into account by the voters.
And it's cost
guys the trophy, and there's no question.
Yes.
And
yeah,
recently,
trophy or yeah, top three status.
I can name names if you'd like me to, but I think
I can think
pretty
of,
obvious.
I can think of one off the top of my head. I'm not going to name either, but
yeah.
Since we've beaten that drum tonight about 8 times, I'm not going to go back there.
It's an octagonal drum.
It's an 8-sided drum.
And for the record,
your percussion.
We're thinking alike.
I think we are.
Yeah, right. No, I know we are. And I mean, you know, this player's problems off the ice were well documented and, you know, had a fabulous final year of college hockey and just, you know, was not even a top 3 finalist based on other factors.
Based on things?
Things. Stuff we heard from a guy who knew this kid who had a source.
Perfect.
Said Ferris is really sick. Threw up at 30.
Okay. All right. Deterioration.
We've deteriorated. Have we deteriorated?
We had mid-podcast deterioration.
Anytime Fred McGriff gets pulled out of the golf bag, yeah, that's deterioration.
I think there's a rule on the podcast that like once every. Oh, I don't know. Once every season, at least, you got to bring up an old Blue Jay.
And we did.
Andy Maldonado.
Fred McGriff. Fred
Ed
McGriff.
Sprague.
Ah, used.
Used.
So, shout out to Jimmy Key.
Was invited to an event on Facebook today. I wanted to let you guys all know. The event is International Hug a Pollock Day coming up on March 1st.
You invited yourself to your own event?
It's gaining momentum.
Is it?
I got a bunch of kids from, you know, University of Arkansas Riverside signed up for it.
On Facebook. Inch does not have a Facebook profile, by the way. We probably should get one, though.
I don't know if we can, because we're not a .edu domain.
Oh, we can.
Oh, no, everybody can get Facebook nowadays.
Well, what we can have is, like, organizations and institutions have basically fan groups, so people can sign up and say, I'm a fan of, you know, insert institution's name here.
Hugging Pollocks.
So, there you go.
Should we give some kind of prize to the first student who creates one?
No, we want to create it. We want to be the administrator.
Oh, we would create it. I'm sorry. I'm sketchy on this whole interweb thing.
Yeah, this newfangled internet.
So. Yeah, it's something else. So this Hug a Pollock thing is legit, huh?
March 1st, Saturday, yeah.
All right.
I'll be at a college hockey game somewhere. I'll mention it on the next Inch podcast. And
I will.
Any of the listeners, come on over and give me a big hug.
I'm going to go track down Marius Tchaikovsky.
He's still sniping somewhere.
Christoph Alloa, that's what I'm going to go find.
Chris, he's still slugging away somewhere. Smoke, Brian Smolinski.
There you go.
I thought Smoke was Tony Stewart.
No way, man.
No.
You know who needs a hug is Kirk Gronowski.
He's getting plenty of hugs where he's going.
I don't think they call those hugs.
Hugs from behind.
Oh, boy.
He stayed out of the slammer, didn't he? By pleading out all that stuff?
We didn't get to talk.
We didn't talk about steroids in baseball.
We didn't talk about the Rajah.
What about that big steroids and college hockey issue we have to settle?
Yeah.
Why would we talk about that when we can talk about which computer-generated ranking system provides a more equitable NCAA tournament?
I don't know.
I don't know either. That'll be your next major feature assignment, Brooke.
All right, I'm on it.
Steroids and caution. Make sure you go to the New York Mets and get all the rats first. They'll tell you where all the good stuff
is. Yeah, what does that say about the Mets?
The Mets are the corniest team in baseball.
Oh, I mean, ultimately, I mean, it's good that it happened. And I have no stake in Roger Clemens at all, but it is kind of gratifying to see him go down in flames. But
I am enjoying every second of watching that man burn.
I got to give him credit for only one thing, sticking to his story. He has not wavered one bit.
Even if it's completely wrong.
He paid somebody a lot to concoct that line of crap, so that's all he's got.
If he had to pay somebody a lot to concoct the lie of I did not do steroids, then he's got more issues than we know about.
Yeah.
Bold guy, though, throwing his wife under the bus. I mean,
yeah, exactly. What a stand-up guy.
No one knew.
It was
the one-armed man.
It was my wife. That's great.
Roger, can you explain this check you wrote for HGH on July 20th? Yes, it was our wedding anniversary. I bought it for my wife.
I bought her some creatine.
Can you explain why the memo in this check said steroids for Roger Clemens?
Because it says steroids Mrs. Roger Clemens. It was our 23rd anniversary. That was the anabolic anniversary. Don't you know that?
Where's Lionel Hutz when you need him?
Lionel Hutz. I move for a bad law thingy.
The late Lionel Hutz.
The late Lionel Hutz.
Okay.
On that note,
it's time to end the podcast. Thank you all for listening. We will have another Inch podcast in the near future.
Paging Kevin Du.
Happy Chinese New Year.
Like a Polish guy.
That's March 1st, bro. March 1st. We'll have another podcast before Hug a Polack Day.